Associates, Thomas Caldwell of Berryville, Virginia, Jessica Watkins of Woodstock, Ohio, sought to downplay their actions, but struggled when pressed by prosecutors to explain their violent messages. The others on trial are Kelly Meggs of Dunellen, Florida, and Kenneth Harrelson of Titusville, Florida. Seditious conspiracy carries up to 20 years behind bars, and all five defendants also face other felony charges. They would be the first people convicted of seditious conspiracy at the trial since the 1995 prosecution of militants who blew up New York City landmarks. The trial unfolding in Washington's federal court, less than a mile from the Capitol building, has provided a window into the ways in which Stuart Rhodes mobilized his group and later tried to reach Donald Trump. But while authorities combed through thousands of messages sent by Stuart Rhodes and his co-defendants, none specifically spelled out a plan to attack the Capitol building itself. Defense attorneys emphasized that fact throughout the trial in arguing that oath keepers who did enter the Capitol were swept up in the spontaneous outpouring of election-fueled rage rather than acting as part of a plot. CNBC has also covered the same story. For the first time in at least a decade, a jury is set to deliberate federal seditious conspiracy charges, weighing the government's case against members of the far-right Oath Keepers militia, who prosecutors say plotted to oppose the peaceful transfer of power by force in the lead-up to the attack on the U.S. Capitol on 6th of January 2021. The founder of Oath Keepers, Elmer Stuart Rhodes III, is facing trial alongside four other defendants, Jessica Watkins, Kelly Meggs, Kenneth Harrelson, and Thomas Caldwell. Jessica Watkins, Kelly Meggs, and Kenneth Harrelson went inside the Capitol building during the attack, while Stuart Rhodes and Thomas Caldwell were present on restricted Capitol grounds on 6th of January. Stuart Rhodes repeatedly tried to get in touch with former President Donald Trump even after the January 6 attack, encouraging Trump to invoke the Insurrection Act and call upon the Oath Keepers to help keep him in the White House despite his election loss. After hearing from the U.S. government last week and from the defendants' attorneys on Friday and Monday, federal prosecutors got the last word during rebuttal before the case went to the jury late on Monday. They took matters out of the hands of the people and put rifles into their own hands, Assistant U.S. Attorney Jeffrey Nessler told jurors. They claimed to wrap themselves in the Constitution. They trampled it instead. They claimed to be saving the Republic, but they fractured the Republic instead. The defendants should be held accountable for agreeing to commit sedition against the government of the United States of America, Jeffrey Nessler said. They are not above the law. We ask you to uphold the Constitution that they tried to subvert, Nessler said. U.S. District Judge Amit Mehta told jurors they would begin deliberations at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Tuesday and resume deliberations on Monday after the Thanksgiving break. Federal prosecutors have not proven that the Oath Keepers had an organized plan to storm the Capitol building before 6th of January. Instead, they say their alleged co-conspirators agreed to oppose the peaceful transfer of presidential power, including by using force. Jason Dolan, an Oath Keeper who testified that he was ready to die to keep Donald Trump in office, told jurors that the Oath Keepers seized the opportunity to storm the Capitol building when they got the chance. "I wanted them to be afraid of me," Jason Dolan said, referring to members of the Congress. "If they weren't going to, in my perspective, do the right thing, maybe they could be scared into doing the right thing. Graydon Young, another oath keeper who cooperated with the US government, said he thought he was part of a Bastille-type moment in history on 6th of January 2021. I guess I was acting like a traitor against my own government, Graydon Young said. Three defendants, Stuart Rhodes, Thomas Caldwell, and Jessica Watkins, took the stand in their own defense during the trial, which began with opening arguments on 3rd of October. Stuart Rhodes testified that he never directed anyone to go into the Capitol building and that he said after he learned the Oath Keepers had gone into the building that it was stupid for them to have done so. But the government played a video of Stuart Rhodes praising the patriots who stormed the Capitol and a recording of him saying that his only regret about January 6 was that they should have brought rifles with them. Prosecutors also showed that Stuart Rhodes tried to send a message to Donald Trump after the attack on Congress.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Negotiators from nearly 200 countries at the COP27 UN Climate Summit in Egypt agreed to set up a loss and damage fund meant to help vulnerable countries cope with climate disasters. They also agreed the globe needs to cut greenhouse gas emissions nearly in half by 2030. The agreement also reaffirmed the goal of keeping global warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. However, for the 27th time, the UN climate talks have failed to directly address the biggest driver of the climate crisis, the production of gas, oil, and coal. This is amid calls for the phase-out of all fossil fuels inside the conference walls and beyond. More than 80 countries had supported a proposal to phase down the use of fossil fuels at the UN Climate Summit. Ultimately, an attempt to address the biggest source of the planet warming emissions that are causing the climate crisis ended in a fiasco as the participants only agreed to phase down polluting coal power and phase out inefficient fossil fuel subsidies. That's after a number of oil and gas producing nations, led by Saudi Arabia, blocked a key proposal to phase out all fossil fuels, not just coal. German Foreign Minister Annalena Baerbock said it is more than frustrating to see overdue steps on mitigation and the phase-out of fossil energies being stonewalled by a number of large emitters and oil producers. Addressing the summit, the European Union's climate chief, Frans Timmermans, said the EU was disappointed with the final outcome of the summit.
What we have in front of us is not enough of a step forward for people and planet. We should have done much more.
The UN chief, Antonio Guterres, reacted with saying that the COP27 climate talks had fallen short in pushing for the urgent, drastic carbon cutting needed to tackle global warming.
Our planet is still in the emergency room. We need to drastically reduce emissions now, and this is an issue this COP did not address.
Environmental campaigners labeled the COP27 summit as yet another monumental failure to tackle climate crisis. Activists blasted richer countries for not doing more to limit carbon emissions. They say the US, EU, UK, and others came to the summit with empty words, hollow promises, and a refusal to take responsibility for having set the planet on fire and destroying millions of lives and livelihoods. While the agreement to establish a loss and damage fund represents immense progress for vulnerable nations who have been calling for finance to address the impacts of climate change for many years, this win is bittersweet. The failure to address the root cause of loss and damage through agreeing to phase out oil, gas, and coal will mean more loss and damage in future. Currently, approximately 84% of the world's energy needs are met from the usage of fossil fuels, especially oil. In 2021, the world consumed nearly 490 exajoules of fossil fuels. That amounts to an unfathomable figure of epic proportions. The world is on track to produce more than double the fossil fuels that are compatible with a 1.5 degrees Celsius target. The fossil fuel industry is also earning 11-figure profits from this addiction, while households struggle to afford basic needs and over 1 billion people live with almost no modern energy. Africa alone is home to 600 million people without access to electricity. The US and China top in fossil fuel consumption. According to data, an average American consumes at least 23 barrels of petroleum every year. With billions of dollars invested every year into establishing wars, strengthening military and weaponry technologies by developed nations, they still have not come up with a concrete solution to end complete dependency on fossil fuels. Future changes are expected to include a warmer atmosphere, a warmer and more acidic ocean, higher sea levels, and larger changes in precipitation patterns. The extent of future climate change depends on what we do now to reduce greenhouse gases.
Security services, the fakest really regime, and certain Western politicians that have engineered plots to spark a civil war, destroy and break up Iran, must know that Iran is neither Libya nor Sudan. That was what Iran's foreign minister tweeted recently. Abdullahian said that Iran's enemies have their eyes set on Iran's territorial integrity and identity, accusing Israel and Western intelligence services of plotting to start civil war in the Islamic Republic. The statements were confirmed by a leaked audio from a presenter at UK's state-funded news channel, BBC Persian. Abdullahian had good reason to relay those sentiments. The statements came on the heels of a number of terrorist attacks in the Islamic Republic. One took place in Izeh, in the southwestern province of Khuzestan, killing seven people, including a nine-year-old boy and woman. The other took place in Isfahan, in which terrorists attacked security forces and killed three of them. There's a vicious anti-Iran media campaign led by terrorist media outlets like the Saudi-funded Iran International, which are twisting the truth and are accusing Iranian security forces of committing the terrorist acts. This stage of the anti-Iran plot is called an armed one, something that the former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton warned about. He claimed that subversive elements in Iran, which he dubbed as the opposition, were arming themselves with weapons stolen from besieged forces and smuggled from Iraq's Kurdistan. This was evident when an uptick in the number of security forces killed were reported during 3 days, from November 15th through November 18th. During this period, 14 security forces were reported to have been victims of terrorist attacks. The terrorist killings in Izeh, Isfahan, and Mashhad, which followed a recent similar attack against pilgrims and worshippers at the shrine of Shah Charagh in Shiraz, also showed that the enemy plots have failed, and they are now subscribing to terrorist acts involving firearms and weapons. Iran has blasted the silence of the international community over the recent terrorist attacks. It blamed foreign powers for promoting and encouraging violence and terrorism. Further said that their silence is testament to that, saying undoubtedly the international silence of claimants of human rights and foreign promoters of chaos and violence in Iran in the face of the most blatant terrorist operations in a number of Iranian cities conveys no other message than encouragement of terrorism and the promotion of terrorism across the world. The Iranian city of Mashhad. Funeral processions were held for three besieged volunteer force members who were stabbed to death by rioters earlier this week. The turnout in the tens of thousands. Iran's leader has stated that they are trying to give the impression that large numbers of people are opposed to the Islamic establishment in order to impress ignorant individuals. However, the leader noted that the people's mass presence on stage to safeguard the Islamic revolution amounts to a slap in the face of ill-wishers. That became even more evident when the following day in Isfahan, again, people showed up in large numbers, tens of thousands, to pay their last respects to the victims while condemning all acts of violence and terror. Putting these scenes next to each other, there is no comparison. The Saudi-funded Iran International depiction of what is happening in Iran is far from reality, to the point that the channel, which Iran has named a terrorist entity, is actively promoting and encouraging not only acts of violence, but is under the delusional impression that there is a revolution underway in Iran. The scenes, when put next to each other, speak for themselves.
For weeks, Iran has witnessed unrest and riots in its different cities. The unrest started after a young woman named Mahsa Amini fainted in police custody and later died in hospital. The protests were initially peaceful, but violent elements supported by Western spy agencies hijacked the protests and turned into violent riots. The unrest has provided the fertile ground for Western governments and spy agencies to launch a media warfare on Iran and create anti-Iran fake news. A recent notorious case in point is the recent tweet by Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. In the controversial tweet, the Canadian Premier had claimed that Iran has sentenced 15,000 protesters to death. The false claim, which has been part of the media campaign against Iran, has been circulating on social media in recent days. The inaccurate tweet was live on Trudeau's official Twitter account for almost 12 hours before it was deleted. Several Western celebrities and news outlets, including the Newsweek, also shared the erroneous information. This is not the only case of false news propagated against Iran. When the protests first started in Iran, Western-backed propaganda outlets claimed that Mahsa Amini was beaten to death by Iranian police forces. Following an elaborate investigation, that claim also proved to be false. It's now become a common practice for these propaganda machines to publish unverified footages on protests in Iran. Back in September 2022, U.S. media outlets ran a controversial report. The report was widely discussed and celebrated in anti-Iran outlets. But it turned out to be a fake report after Ayatollah Khamenei publicly attended a military ceremony in Tehran in October. The false report was propagated by Western outlets as Iran was battling the Western-backed riots. Social media platforms have also turned into a battleground of narratives against Iran. Analysis shows those tweeting the hashtags associated with the unrest showed a striking number of new accounts created since the protests started.
In August 2011, when there were riots in London because someone was shot and killed by the police, a number of people were killed. I don't recall the exact number. But big tech, Facebook, back then BlackBerry, and Twitter cooperated with the British government. In the case of Iran, big tech is used as a weapon against Iranians. So Iranian voices don't come out. Iranians lose their, if they are opposed to the Western narrative, they get sanctioned. All of the Iranian media is sanctioned. Many individuals have lost their accounts. I have lost my Facebook and Instagram accounts. So these Western big tech companies, they cooperate with Western governments, even though in the riots in London, people were killed, okay, and they arrested people and put them in jail for inciting riots. But in Iran, these same media outlets make threats, they support, they help people make Molotov cocktails, and they help mobilize the rioters.
The online anti-Iran campaign is fed by fake accounts used by members of the anti-Iran Mujahideen-e-Khalq organization terrorist cult who are stationed in Albania and so-called journalists employed by the Saudi-funded London-based Iran International TV, which is now on Tehran's terror blacklist. The television channel has openly been promoting monarchists, the highly notorious MKO terror group, and most significantly, separatist terrorists. A particular case in point is a project by Western media outlets to accuse the government of killing its own citizens. They have produced a long list of citizens which they claim have been killed by security forces.
Iran has witnessed another deadly terrorist attack. The latest deadly incident happened in the city of Izeh in Iran's southwestern province of Khuzestan. Unidentified gunmen opened fire on civilians and security forces, killing several people, including a child and an elderly woman. The terror attack also left a number of people injured. No group has yet claimed responsibility for the assault. President Ebrahim Raisi has condoled with the families of the victims, ordering security officials to identify and bring to justice all terrorists behind the attack. A senior judicial official says three people who were behind the brutal attack were arrested. A special operation is going on to identify and to bring to justice other people involved in the attack in the city of Izeh. Separately, a religious seminary school in the Izeh city was set ablaze by a group of rioters. No one was injured in that incident. Separately, three people were killed and eight security forces injured during riots in Semirom in the central Iranian province of Isfahan. Two security forces also killed and two others wounded in the city of Malikshahr in Isfahan province. Last month, a terrorist attack happened in the city of Shiraz. On October 26, a terrorist attacked the popular Shia shrine of Shah Cheragh in Iran's southwestern province of Fars, killing over a dozen people. That attack was claimed by the Daesh terrorist group. The attacks come amid ongoing foreign-backed riots that have hit various Iranian provinces after a 22-year-old Kurdish woman named Mahsa Amini died in the hospital despite intensive medical care and resuscitation efforts. The rioters have been going on a rampage across the country, attacking security officers, resorting to vandalism against public property, and desecrating religious sanctities. Iran says the attacks are part of a larger plot to destabilize the country. Foreign Minister Amir Abdullahian says security services, the Israeli regime, and certain Western politicians are conspiring to trigger a civil war in Iran to destroy and to disintegrate the country. He warned them that Iran is not Libya or Sudan. He also noted that the enemies are targeting Iran's territorial integrity and identity, saying that Iran will not allow anyone to jeopardize national security. The terrorist attack comes amid Western attempts to stoke unrest in Iran and to create more economic hardships for the Iranian people. Late last month, Iran's main intelligence bodies reported that the U.S., backed by the U.K., Saudi Arabia, Israel, and other allies, are devising a multidimensional plot for instigating riots in the Islamic Republic and directing the wave of violence.
We are telling our enemies, the U.S., Britain, the Saudis, these are the ones that, through their destructive media outlets, they are targeting our revolution. We are warning them that we will break you, we will crush you, you will not find any way into this territory.
Western countries expressed their open support for rioters and acts that Tehran described as inciting violence and hatred. The European Union and some Western countries have imposed sanctions on Iran over its approach toward the recent riots. Recently, the former U.S. National Security Advisor John Bolton confirmed that subversive groups in Iran, which he characterized as the opposition, are being armed with weapons imported from Iraq's Kurdistan.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Thank you. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد عودك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. اللهم صل على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وأجل فرج.
Respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, and welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. I really welcome you all, and also our brothers from Sevier International School. Welcome Fawad Haider and Salamun Alaikum.
Salam, thank you, sir.
Are you
How
good?
Are you?
Alhamdulillah, yes. Thank you so much. And Brother Ali Nasser?
Alhamdulillah, sir.
Great, that's great. So, brothers and sisters, thank you so much once again for joining us. So, Brother Fawad and Ali Nasser, inshallah, today our topic is about Ayah 114 of Surah Al-Baqarah. We'll have a short explanation and also the main topic, which is practical tajweed rules. Inshallah, we'll have these two topics in our in this session, inshallah. Okay, so Ali Nasser and Fawad Haider, and also our brothers and sisters who are listening to us right now, make sure you have your Quran and you are on Ayah 114. Let's listen once and then we'll continue our class. Alhamdulillah, nice recitation, and one good news, inshallah now we'll have a nice recitation as well. Make sure you listen and repeat after me.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim.
Bismillahir rahmanir rahim.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
ومن أظلم ممن منع مساجد الله أن يذكر فيها اسمه وسعى في خرابها.
ومن أظلم ممن منع مساجد الله أن يذكر فيها اسمه وسعى في خرابها.
أولئك ما كان لهم أن يدخلوها إلا خائفين
أولئك ما كان لهم أن يدخلوها إلا خائفين
لهم في الدنيا خزي ولهم في الآخرة عذاب عظيم
لهم في الدنيا خزي ولهم في الآخرة عذاب عظيم
أحسن Thank you so much ومن أظلم ممن منع مساجد الله أن يذكر فيها اسمه وسعى في خرابها Who is a greater wrongdoer? Okay? Who is more zalim? Who is greater wrongdoer than the one who denies access to the mosque of Allah? The one who do not let people go to the mosques? Or those who prevent people from entering the mosques? Okay? Who is wrongdoer, greater wrongdoer than him? And also, what does he do? And lest his name be celebrated therein, and it means they do not let people, okay, to kind of say the names or remember the name of Allah in the mosques, okay, in the masjids. Who is greater wrongdoer than him? Did you get the message? Yeah, Allah Almighty is saying that who is that greater? It means the one who does this, he is a great wrongdoer. Okay, he's a great zalim. وَسَعَى فِي خَرَابِهَا And he tries to ruin them, to destroy the masajids. Okay? أُولَٰئِكَ So, if those who do this, what happens to them? أُولَٰئِكَ مَا كَانَ لَهُمْ أَن يَدْخُلُوهَا إِلَّا خَائِفِينَ Such ones, those people, may not enter the masajid إِلَّا خَائِفِينَ Except in fear. They will enter. It means even if they enter the masjid, okay, because their aim is to destroy, their aim is to stop people from entering the masajid, from like this culture of going to masajid, this Sharia law that you should go to masajid, remember Allah Almighty, these things, they want to prevent people, okay? So they themselves, if they want to enter the masajid, they will enter with fear, of course, okay? They are so scared of being kind of, they are in danger, of course, in danger of themselves, yes? إِلَّا خَائِفِينَ Inshallah, we'll explain. لَهُمْ فِي الدُّنْيَا خِيزٌ There is disgrace for them in this world, and there is for them also a great punishment in the hereafter. So the message is this, okay? That those who prevent people from going to the masajid, what do? They bombard the masajid. They explode the masajid, okay? Like we have Daesh and these things. So what happens to them? They say that we kill the people because they are not Muslims. But look, they are killing Muslims in the masajid. How many people they have killed in the masajids in Palestine, in Yemen, in Afghanistan, in Pakistan. Look, they're killing these people, the Muslims, okay? And they say, we are Muslims. We do this based on the Quranic verses. What does the Quran say? Look. وَسَعَى فِي خَرَابِهِ أُولَٰئِكَ مَا كَانَ لَهُمْ أَيَدْخُلُهَا إِلَّا خَائِفِينَ لَهُمْ فِي الدُّنْيَا خِزْيٌ وَلَهُمْ فِي الْآخِرَةِ عَذَابٌ عَظِيمٌ Allah Almighty clearly says this. It means you are kafir. You are mushrik. You're not Muslims if you're doing so. And also one message to those parents that alhamdulillah, Muslim parents, okay, they all are good at these things. They send their children to the masajid. They help their children learn Islamic teachings, okay? But there are some parents, okay, that they do not let their children to go to masajid to learn Quran. They pay, I know, they pay, especially those who are in Europe, okay? They pay a lot of money for their kids to go to piano class. To go to dance class, to go to karate class, to go to any type of other classes, okay? Guitar classes. I know them. But they do not pay a single penny for their children to learn Quran, to go to masajid. They do not pay a single coin, okay? Or a single dollar, okay? For their children to rent a bus to go, okay? With a bus to the masjid and learn Quran. But besides, we have a lot of good Muslims that they put everything for their children, okay, they give everything so that their children learn Islamic teachings. Their future should be bright. Their future should be Muslim, okay? Islamic future, and inshallah they will have a place in heaven.
قرآني نبض حياتي قرآني طهر ذاتي قرآني عصمة أمري قرآني طوق نجاتي قرآني
نبض حياتي. How to learn Quran easy? What is the correct way to read the Quran? What is the correct way to learn Arabic and understand the Quran? Be with Let's Recite the Quran.
So, really? Guys, let's go for the tajweed rules. Woman أظلمو, Nun Sakin plus Hamza. Uh-huh. It's Nun Sakin plus Hamza. We had it in the previous ayah as well. In ayah, Man أسلمَ وجهه in ayah 112, right? We had it. So, Nun Sakin plus Hamza, the rule?
إظهار.
إظهار, right. Woman أظلمو, مِمَّن مَنَعَ. All are?
Idgham.
Mim idgham. Yeah, mim. Actually, min man.
Yeah.
It's like this. Min man mana'a. Look. Min from man. Those who mana'a. Stop or prevent. Min man mana'a.
So it's idgham misling.
Because you do idgham, so you pronounce it this way. Mim man mana'a. Look. All the noon will be sacrificed here, okay? Mim man mana'a. Masajid Allahi ayyudhkara. Merge them. Fi hasmuhu. Fi hasmuhu. Brothers and sisters, if you don't know what idgham is, you want to learn more, idhar, ikhfa, please listen to our previous sessions. We have explained all of them in the Tajweed Rules series of classes that we had about reading and fluency of the Quran Karim recitation. And also, Tajweed Rules, please refer to them, inshallah, and listen to them, learn them, inshallah, and also continue being with us, okay? Stay with us. So, مِمَّن مَنَعَ مَسَاجِدَ اللَّهِ أَيُّذْكَرَ فِيهَا اسْمُهُ فِيهَا. Then ismuhu starts with Hamzatul Wasl, and we have a long vowel before Hamzatul Wasl. So, you want to join these two words, فِيهَا with ismuhu. What is the rule? Now, Ali Nasir?
Here.
فِيهَا ismuhu. Ismahu, sorry. فِيهَا ismahu. Ismuhu. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So here, fiha,
mm-hmm.
and it's Hamzatul Wasl.
Mm-hmm.
So can we just say fiha izhar, then we say the next one?
There is no izhar. No, you have to skip Hamzatul Wasl. So you skip Hamzatul Wasl, and you have to skip the long vowel sound. Fiha, not ha.
Yeah.
So why do we pronounce it like this?
That's the rule says. You skip Hamzatul Wasl. When you skip Hamzatul Wasl, so you have to skip that long vowel sound. No, it's not.
The meaning will change, yeah?
Yeah, kind of. Actually, it's the beauty, okay?
Yeah.
The meaning is simple here, it's clear, but the beauty, the recitation, it says this way, okay? Fi hasmuhu, it changes kind of the word, yes. Fi hasmuhu, change it. Fi hasmuhu, okay. Make sure you skip the long vowel and also the...
وَسَعَى
فِي خَرَابِهَا. There is a jim. Jim says that you should stop here. You can stop. It's optional.
Yeah.
Stop or continue. Any of them. أُولَٰئِكَ مَا كَانَ لَهُمْ أَن يَدْخُلُوهَا إِدْغَام هَا إِلَّا. Hamza and Mad are in two separate letters, okay? Different letters. So the Mad is not wajib. That's why in recitation I didn't prolong it, okay? Which means you can prolong it or... You don't.
Ja is
munfasil. Khaifin. This is wajib because mad is also in the word khaifin and hamza is also in the word khaifin. Khaifin. Lahum fi dunya. Dunya was one of the exceptional words that we do not apply the rule idgham.
Yeah.
We have no sakin plus ya, but it was exceptional case. Lahum fi dunya khizyun. Tanween plus waw, merge them, right? Yar malun letters. Khizyun, khizyun. Walahum fil akhirati azabun azim. Tanween plus ayn from throat letters. Ilhar. You do not bounce it. You do not kind of merge it. Nothing. So, Alhamdulillah, the tajweed rules, which were very important here, we mentioned them. So make sure, inshallah, you practice them. And for more information about the explanation, about the details, about the tafsir, make sure you refer to the Mufassirin's books, interpretations, inshallah. See you in the coming sessions. If you have any questions, no, brothers?
No.
Okay. Brothers and sisters, thanks so much for being with us. You've listened all the time. Allah bless you, inshallah. Thanks to IRIB English Radio and Sevier International Schools Network. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa alihi al-tahirin.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وجل فرج.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Xavier International Schools.
ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Thousands of baby turtles have been released into Peru's Amazon basin in an attempt to preserve the rainforest ecosystem. More than 6,000 hatchlings of three endangered species of turtles have been released into lakes and lagoons in Peru to help them repopulate. To make this happen, wildlife officials collected the eggs from their natural habitat and transferred them to artificial beaches until they hatched. The river turtles are considered vulnerable because for many years they have been killed for human consumption or kept as pets. Scientists are currently trying to conserve the Amazon to avoid catastrophic climate change, and Peru has the second largest share of the rainforest after Brazil. Another world record news. This time it has been set in Switzerland. A Swiss railway company has run the world's longest passenger train with a trip on one of the most spectacular tracks through the Alps. To celebrate its 175th anniversary, Switzerland's rail industry launched the world's longest ever passenger train, measuring around 2 kilometers. The electric train took almost an hour to cover around 25 kilometers over the UNESCO World Heritage Albula line in eastern Switzerland. The Albula line is famous for its endless swooping curves and steep descents. Rail enthusiasts lined the valley to watch the train's 100 cars snake through the Alps. Belgium and the Netherlands were the previous record holders for the world's longest passenger train. They used standard railway through the flat landscapes.
After repeated failed attempts, NASA has eventually launched this moon rocket on its debut flight. NASA's next-generation moon rocket blasted off from Florida, marking the start of the space agency's new program dubbed Artemis. An uncrewed Orion spaceship is fixed to the top of the 32-story tall Space Launch System rocket. It will be separated for a 25-day voyage around the moon and back without astronauts aboard. It was the third time after two previous launch attempts were cancelled for technical reasons. If the mission succeeds, a crewed Artemis II will orbit around the moon but not land on the surface in 2024. The third Artemis mission, scheduled for 2025, will be the first to put astronauts on the moon since Apollo's mission about 5 decades ago.
Iran has hosted an international student scientific contest dubbed Noor or Light. The annual event seeks to promote science among children and scout for child prodigies. Yusuf Jalali has the story.
They have only 1 minute to present a scientific idea in their homemade clips. Over 1,300 teenage science enthusiasts from 19 countries participated in Iran's Noor competition, a scientific contest for school students. The fifth edition of the event was themed with optical illusion and mathematical modeling. The top 100 videos were awarded during this closing ceremony in Tehran.
My work is titled The Bouncing Ball. We painted a long oval and a shadow under it. When we film it from a certain angle, it takes the shape of a levitating ball.
Our work is about an optical illusion. We created a set of conjoining cylinders that appear to change shape in the mirror. The idea was first created by a Japanese engineer in 2016.
The most creative videos win the prize. They should be both educational and mind-blowing, like this floating Rubik's Cube, which appears to be levitating, but then turns out to be just an origami work.
We have two levels of the competition. One is the kind of general competition for the crowd, and many students can contribute on that, in that. And we have other level, which is for elites. And in that level, we have more sophisticated competition between elite.
Organizers say participants in Noor contests are not supposed to make breakthroughs. The main goal, they say, is to engage them in science and let them experience the excitement of scientific experiments.
Try to make these teenagers learn how they can think about science for the welfare of human beings and how they can apply it for them.
Mustafa Science and Technology Foundation is the organizer of this scientific event. The foundation also holds the biennial Mustafa Prize, which awards cash prizes to top scientists from across the Muslim world, whose accomplishments contribute to the welfare of human beings.
Mustafa Science and Technology Foundation, as the organizer of Noor competition, says prodigies are everywhere. They just need to be discovered. It says this contest is a platform that's specially designed to scout for teenage minds and give them a chance to shine. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Chinese aerobatic teams have been performing jaw-dropping stunts to mark the 73rd anniversary of the People's Liberation Army Air Force. Pilots wowed the audience with their complicated maneuvers, such as swooping close to the ground, making loops and rolls. Aerobatic teams use red, yellow and blue smoke trails representing the flag of the Chinese Air Force. The Hongying aerobatic team, also known as the Red Eagle, is made up of 10 JL-8 trainer planes and 20 pilots from the Air Force Aviation University. The performance was part of China's International Aviation and Aerospace Exhibition held in southern China. The exhibit typically draws thousands of participants in the field of aviation from countries all over the world.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Iran is the land of saffron, and the red gold has earned the country a fortune throughout the centuries. Now Iran's city of Torbat Haydariya has hosted a saffron photography festival as a means to introduce the lucrative product to the world. Yusuf Jalali reports.
Like gold, it is weighed in shekels, not in kilos. And that's why saffron is called the red gold, reflecting how precious it is economically. Torbat Haideriyeh in northeast Iran is the hub of saffron cultivation in the country, producing an average of 20 million tons of the crop each year. Now the city hosts the Festival of Saffron Photography every year to introduce Iran as the land of saffron and how these hard-working farmers produce the strategic crop.
Photographers present in this festival should use their artistry to shed light on different stages of saffron harvest all the way to the final product. Everyone knows Iranian saffron, but perhaps few know how it's produced. So this festival highlights this issue using photography.
Photography is a universal language that needs no translation, so their photos can better introduce this strategic plant to the world from unique angles.
This year, Iran exported roughly 300 tons of saffron, generating more than $350 million in income, according to the data provided by the Ministry of Agriculture. Experts believe Iran could have a much higher share of the global trade of saffron if it pays better attention to branding and marketing of the product.
Due to favorable weather conditions, Iranian saffron is unique in the world. But unfortunately, in many countries, it's smuggled in bulk and is packaged under foreign brands and then sold at higher prices. If we can brand it inside Iran, then we can export it more efficiently.
The young farm owner says his saffron is exported to Europe and the Middle East, despite the restrictions caused by U.S. sanctions on Iran. But more than the U.S. measures, he's concerned about the impact of climate change on saffron cultivation, warning of what he calls saffron immigration from his city, if authorities remain idle.
Unfortunately, saffron is gradually leaving our region and moving to western parts of Iran. This is due to changes in weather conditions and declining rainfall here. If the government helps farmers with modification of planting patterns, we can stop this disaster.
Over the past 2 years, Iran has expanded its cultivation area for saffron to 115,000 hectares, nearly 20 times more than the entire worldwide land dedicated to the crop. While the Iranian red gold is mainly cultivated in the northeastern Khorasan province, other parts of the country, including Khuzestan and Chaharmahal Bakhtiari, are also fertile for saffron farming.
For centuries, saffron has been a key word in Iran's economy, and still is today. Now, Saffron Photography Festival says many know Iran by its red gold, but through the photos shot here, they will get a glimpse of the mesmerizing saffron farms in Iran and how this amazing crop is produced. Yusuf Jalali from the saffron farms in the suburbs of Torbat Haydariyeh.
Usually, rats are associated with garbage and disease, but these rats are not the typical rodents. They are being trained in Tanzania for search and rescue operations. These are a breed called the African giant pouch rat, which is naturally a very curious creature. It can weigh up to around 1,500 grams and are known to have longer lifespans than other rats. Lead researcher at the Belgium-based non-profit company Apopo, Donna Keane, says this species can live up to 10 years. This means that even after the 9 months of training, the rat will still have a long working career ahead. The size and agility of rats make them invaluable for search and rescue efforts.
So this is where the idea for the rats came in, because the rats are just as trainable as dogs. They've got a great sense of smell, and their small size and natural agility should hopefully make them really good in this scenario where they could squeeze in small spaces and get closer to any victims.
The rescue rats began training in August last year at the Apopo's Training and Research Center. The rodents are fitted with tiny backpacks that enable real-time wireless audio-visual communication. When they find a potential victim, they pull a small handle hanging around their neck to let the rescue handlers know. The rats were trained to locate humans in mock disaster zones, such as aftermath of earthquakes. Apopo has already trained rats to detect landmines and to sift out tuberculosis. So much joy can be found in a bottle of luxury perfume, but parting with hundreds of dollars for such scents, I can take the shine off that experience. Now in Syria, a perfumer is helping people smell expensive without digging too deep into their pockets. One whiff of a fragrance is all a Syrian perfumer needs to recreate the scents of luxury brands for a fraction of a cost. That's very welcome in a country ravaged by years of foreign-backed militancy. Dozens of customers flock daily to his tiny store nestled in the historic bazaar of Damascus. They flash photos on their phones of high-end perfumes they want to replicate. He says all he has is his nose.
Here lies the secret of the profession and the brain power. I started training my nose to smell perfumes since I was 15 years old. I do not own high-end equipment. All I have is my nose, my brain power and expertise. That's all.
In the war-torn country, many people struggle to afford life's bare necessities, let alone perfume. With the local currency losing much of its value, Syrian employees reportedly make roughly $25 a month, on average a quarter of the price of a bottle of imported perfume. This perfumer sells his fragrances for about $6, drawing in a flow of clients from all walks of life.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.